There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
Hello. Hi.
Wow, here we are.
Back like
it's been a long time coming.
I think we've never left.
Tell me everything.
Tell me everything.
You first.
We have 2 years to catch up on here.
Isn't that crazy? 2 years? You were session number three, Christine.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
And you guys were like, what, July 2021 started?
Yeah. Officially potting, yeah.
Well, once again, Christine, you're looking very debonair.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Always.
I have had... I got back yesterday from Texas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was that your first pro-am?
That was my first pro-am, yeah. So it exceeded my expectations. It was really wonderful. And they brought all of the Charles Schwab challengers together.
Nice.
To play in a group. So it was my first time meeting fellow challengers. And just like... They picked them really well, so it was a treat.
For the audience at home, can you give us just a brief backstory of the Charles Schwab challenge and your involvement in that, and then obviously then what brought you down to Texas for the tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. So golf has this really wonderful way of like connecting people, and after I did the interview for Golfers Journal, Casey. Recommended me to the person who was in charge of selecting the next challenger.
Damn.
And so Charles Schwab does a series called The Challengers. And what it is basically highlighting people in the golf industry who are challenging their respective portion of the industry, whether that be players, coaches, architects, and any facet. So I shot that last year, and it was released this spring in time for the first... first PGA tournaments. So that was, and it was just one of those really special experiences because we shot it at the Toronto Hunt, which was my first solo gig.
Right.
And then we went to my hometown and we shot with like, my uncle was there, my dad was there, my brother, my cousin, and my grand
Your
has
grand.
This amazing like second voice in the little short film. So it was just such a special experience. I mean, for my whole family. So shout out Charles Schwab. Thanks, Chucky.
I smoked pot with Charles Schwab back in the day. I didn't know that your grandma was Scottish. Like, I didn't know you actually had roots to Scotland. That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
she's very, cool. very she's very Scottish. You guys are gonna love this. So she turned 90 recently, and she's kind of been hinting to the family that she wants like one last trip home before she can't go home anymore. So her and I are renting a car. We're traveling around Scotland for 10 days. We're seeing some of her family. We're going to see the sights. We're just going to like be home together, her and I, in Scotland for 10 days. So I'm ecstatic.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's like in 10 days.
Oh, wow.
You got to pack.
I know. I got to get going. She's so sweet. She emails me like literally every day. She's very capable 90-year-old. But sometimes she still surprises me. She'll have like seen an advertisement for this hostel in Jura. She's like, do you want to stay in a hostel on Sunday night? I'm like, well, maybe. Like, yeah. Do you?
This is your trip.
Yeah, this is your trip. She's like, oh, there's this great... pony trekking trip in the Highlands. It's a 4-hour pony trek. Should we do that? I was like, if you want to, like, I'm down.
Yeah.
Wow.
4 hours.
So this could be, you know, a pretty epic trip if this plays out.
When you said she's like capable, tech savvy, I thought you were going to say like, yeah, she makes TikToks and like those transitions.
Could. She might have a burner account.
So when you were on site at the Charles Schwab, Christine, what was the atmosphere like? How did it feel to have like the challengers all together and playing the pro-am? It's secretly, I will add, the three of ours ultimate dream to play in a pro-am together. So we need tips. We need tricks. How should we dress? What's the deal?
It was really inspiring because these people are all just like very renowned in their respective corners of the industry. I played with Tanya Tare. She's the trick shot artist from New Zealand. I played with Brendan Thomas, who is the publisher of Golfers Journal. And Chad, who is an adaptive needs golfer, who is the only person with disabilities to play on the Korn Ferry Tour. So
wow,
all really special people. And there was just generally like a vibrancy that was really special and very audible throughout the whole, you know, 2 days that we spent together, because we did the pairing party before and then got up early to the golf club breakfast. And you feel like very important because you have caddies and you have this kind of the crew, the Charles Schwab crew that's following you around with cameras. And I was super nervous to hit my first tee shot. And I haven't felt, golf hasn't made me feel that nervous in a while. So it was kind of a nice awakening.
How did you react to those nerves?
I really just tried to focus on being present, taking everything in, using that energy to just really like spend the day with these people. And golf was very much secondary.
Yeah,
it was just like trying to make good connections, trying to have fun, and just, yeah, not worrying about where the golf ball went, because I mean, you're playing a pro-am, it's, you know, it's hard golf. Like you're not shooting your best round ever. So just letting that go is pretty easy in that space that they created, which was felt really comfortable.
How sick would it be if you did though?
Yeah. Shoot your best round. Shoot your best round.
The Michael Block style.
Just went out, shot two under. Like,
yeah, but like it probably wouldn't matter. Like that's right. Also,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
That's not going to be the best part of your day.
Right. Or if you, in an alternate universe, you don't soak in everyone's energy and like how excited you are to be there, and you're just like laser focused at the parent party, and like then you go out and shoot 200, then everybody's like,
oh shit,
I get it. Oh yeah, my god. She's trying to win the thing.
I've owed Gil Hance a big hug for a long time, and I finally had the opportunity. He came up and gave me that big hug on the 10th hole on Wednesday, and that was just like a moment that's gonna sit with me for a long time.
That's such an underrated feeling of meeting someone for the first time, putting a hug on someone for the first time that you've had a relationship with virtually for so long. Yeah. And I don't know if you'd met Gil before, but like even
I hadn't.
Yeah. So that's a huge pleasure these days, especially after the pandemic.
It was just such a pleasure. You're right. It was a bit surreal and such a pleasure. You only get to do that once. So
we've all had that experience. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time Brad and Drew and I put a hug on each other for the first time was like a lightning strike. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then seeing you in St. Andrews or in Edinburgh, Christine.
Oh, wasn't that special?
God. Yeah, delightful. And that was a
golf
year ago.
Just like, that was a year ago. But, you're reminded how special golf is because it makes these moments happen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we lose that. But that was really amazing. Spend the night together. Connor crashed on my couch and got to see some incredible golf.
That was, I owe you, like, I have a great debt to you for allowing me to go to the Open at St. Andrews. Pretty wild, fortuitous experience. And
I'm so happy grateful. You made that happen.
And I was solo for that day, but the night that we got to chill before that was just as cool. I mean, like,
it was really nice. We've been
in each other's lives now for 2.5 years or so. And getting to meet for the first time was incredible. And share a dram of whiskey and catch up was lovely.
God,
I'm imagining Connor in your hotel suite because I know how nimble he is, just like folded up in the corner. Like
he literally was like, these hotels in Edinburgh were not big. Like he's literally like folded up inside the folded couch. Like,
yeah, the fold out cot.
He slept sitting up.
Yeah. Accordioned.
Yeah. Exactly. I wasn't sure if it was like your bag I was looking at or your bag.
Like, right.
I think I slept facing like up. A mummy too. I think it was just emotions.
Just leave me here. I'm fine.
Leave me here.
And then he was up and gone at like 6 a.m. So
I was out.
It was It was a bit magical. Yeah.
It was like a,
was just that real?
A dream. Christine, what have you been working on since we last chatted formally 2 years ago? What are some notable projects that you've had cooking that you're excited about? I know you've also been all over the place traveling. And
yeah, I've been all over the place. I think one that I would love to talk about just because it's so special to me is the Toronto Hunt Project. I was awarded that job about a year ago now and had to go through the whole like interview process up against 9 other architects. Started out as something where I thought I was just, you know, getting the ask because, you know, for the diversity card or just, you know, and made it down to the top 3 architects. And I still kind of thought that way. And then down to the top 2 architects. And I started to really dig my heels in and think, oh my God, wow, I can actually do this. I have a shot. And I got the job. And it was just, it's been like a year of growth for me because of that project and a lot of firsts and a lot of experiences that they don't teach you about in, you know, golf design books about politics of clubs and dealing with committees and trying to please a membership of 800 people at the same time. And just like finding my own voice and finding some confidence and having really supportive people in that project to push me. It's been pretty incredible. And I'm the first woman in Canada to get a lead architect role ever. Wow. So
Mic drop right there.
Congratulations. I mean, that's,
yeah.
Thank you.
That's phenomenal.
Seriously.
When you talk about finding your voice, especially in different rooms with different types of people, you're having to sell yourself essentially and your work to different audiences. If you can look inwardly, what have you learned about your true voice as an architect and as a person, as a professional? What does your voice sound like? What do you think it carries?
I think the best part of this job and the way that I've chosen to do this job and part of my design process is like using my voice to amplify other voices and allowing space for people who aren't often considered to feel comfortable and feel safe and feel like they're able to be vulnerable in what they share. So finding my voice and value in my voice is just making that space for people to come forward. And it really has led to a design result that I'm really proud of because it isn't just my voice. It's a lot of voices and a lot of collaboration that's got us there. And I think that's part of why I feel so confident in what I'm presenting in this project is because it is a collaboration. If it was just my voice and my opinions and here's what I thought and here's what you better do, like that's just not authentic to who I am. So I've really enjoyed that part of the design process.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's been evident in your, you know, web presence and things like that, but your work too, from the beginning, right, is design for other people, like with others in mind.
Yeah.
I guess for those maybe who didn't listen to the first time that we talked, can you explain a little bit about your approach to that concept of designing with others in mind?
As I tried to find a space for golf in golf architecture for myself, I had to really first understand what I was trying to do with golf architecture. And it became like with trial and error and with curiosity, it's kind of settled on this place of like using golf architecture to serve a different need within the industry. And, you know, I'm in no way revolutionizing golf architecture concepts or ideas or templates at all. I'm using 100-year-old design methods, but applying them in a different way to serve different people. And it's really been a process and it's been a discovery and it's been an evolution. But I think that's what makes what I'm trying to do so exciting because it is evolving and it does depend on who I'm trying to serve. Like this is a service that I'm trying to provide to communities and to people with disabilities, people who, you know, have never really believed in golf in the way that we do, and trying to use golf to make people feel seen and heard in whatever way they need.
That's beautiful. My favorite thing about what you do, just how open and welcoming the thought is. It's thoughtfulness.
And that's exactly what it is. It's just considering, and inviting.
Right.
And like, golf on its own means nothing to me. Like, it really doesn't. Golf is the tool that I use to allow people to practice their mental health and their physical health and develop relationships and be vulnerable. Like, golf is very much secondary or tertiary, even in a lot of these instances.
That's the title of the episode. Golf means nothing to Christine Fraser.
I love it. Bookmark it. I think one thing that I think of in terms of golf and accessibility, it's, you think about the people and like the gatekeepers within the golf community, but I don't think that many people often think about how the course itself and the setup and the design can be unwelcoming to people. Can you talk a little bit about that and what your thought process is of looking at golf holistically for everyone, and how in the past it might not have been always that way?
I think a really tangible example is we have ADA standards of design when we're building a clubhouse or designing a parking lot. And as soon as you arrive at the first tee, all of those standards disappear. We don't have those standards for the golf course. So when we use stairs to access tees or really steep slopes to access greens, it immediately limits the access and creates barriers for people with mobility needs or any kind of adaptive needs. So just really trying to consider design thoughtfully to allow more people to access, literally access the first tee, is a very simple step to then you just roll on that. And again, it's asking people what they need. People in solo riders need specific things. They need a part of the green to access that's less than a 15 degree slope or a 25 degree slope. That's pretty objective, and that's very doable. And it doesn't mean creating flat, uninteresting golf courses. It just means creating one portion of the green that they can access.
Mm-hmm. Right. Since it has been 2 years since we last had you on the show, at least, what's something you've learned about your process or even about yourself in that time as more opportunities have come your way, as you've blazed trails, as you've learned more about the industry and about your place in it?
I have a really great support system that I have not always wanted to lean on in the past, but have found that allowing myself to ask for help or creating boundaries has been really helpful for my design process. And whether that be asking for space or asking to walk a golf course on my own rather than with six members of the committee so that I have time in my own head, that's been a really helpful tool of just advocating for what I need to make this design better. And not necessarily, I suppose it's asking for help and also saying no a little bit more as well, to give myself more space or headspace.
That's something we all need help with, isn't it? The power of no.
Power of no.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Why do you think you've been hesitant to ask for help or lean into your support network historically?
I think because as a woman in this industry, I don't want to be seen as weak or needing help or not being capable on my own, and how that leads to stereotyping. So I've just tried to, work twice as hard to get the job done. And that's not necessarily the smartest or most efficient way to do good design.
Mm. Yeah. Because design is, as much as you're sat, doing AutoCAD, design is a community effort, right? It can't just be done by one person. Certainly the architecture portion of it, like you can't be digging the ditches and laying down the irrigation pipes by yourself. Like you need a team ultimately, right?
No, absolutely not. And you need people like supporting you in different ways, whether that be like refilling your creative tank by going to an art gallery, or you know, whatever that is for you. That like it looks different, but it's all meaningful.
I remember you saying you don't have like a signature feature or thumbprint that you put on your courses 2 years ago. Has that changed at all for you?
I don't think so. I no, not at all.
You're like, hey, it ain't really about me.
No, but that's it. Like, that's exactly, I think that's a great point, because it's like, not, I'm not playing this golf course every day that I'm designing. Like you are, you have to tell me what you need and what you want and what you're trying to get out of this experience.
I feel like far too often in the golf course architecture community, and I am in no way a nerd of golf course architecture. I'm just kind of on the outside looking in, but it seems like the golf course architects, they're looking to put their mark on the course versus looking to serve others. And that could just be my outside opinion, but the fact that you think about the people that are playing it first versus, well, I'm going to put the Christine Fraser stamp on it and everyone's going to know I fucking did this. That's really refreshing.
Yeah. Ask me again in 2 years, but for now the answer remains.
That's why we like to check in, you know. Have your finish lines or North Stars goalposts changed at all?
I think they've refined a little bit. I'm sure they have evolved because I have evolved, but I still feel the same way about golf that I did then, I think, which is like slight trepidation, but also a lot of optimism and excitement and inspiration in this kind of community that we are all a part of.
What do you make of the community now? You know, I love that, for example, a Charles Schwab, Chuck E. Cheese.
Charles Schwab.
I love that a Charles Schwab has reached out to you, seeing you, elevated your voice and helped tell your story. What do you make of that type of storytelling now? Because I think, you know, we look back a couple of years ago and folks like us were like beating that door down. It seems like now there's a little bit more of an appetite for it. Yeah. How does that sit with you?
Yeah. I mean, I think I imagine you three can speak to this as well, because we've been like working the last 2 years, like hard, like in it, and made a lot of sacrifices and personally as well to get there. And now that we're, you know, there in a sense or in a way or in a feeling, you know, was it worth it and does it satisfy and what's next? And I think, was it worth it and does it satisfy is a resounding yes from me. What's next is the exciting part. And so long as we can like bring our partners and our family along for that ride, like we keep going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. What's next is exciting. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. And I think the three of us have talked about this recently, but I don't know that a couple of years ago I could have seen the way group golf therapy was going to shape up, you know, for it to look the way that it does now. Maybe in you know, on some level, like in my wildest dreams, you know, but who's to say, you know, that won't, my expectations won't be exceeded in 2 years' time. And I just hope that somewhere along the line, the four of us end up on a golf course together, because that needs to happen like yesterday.
That would be wonderful. I know.
Oh, it will.
I want that too.
Easily.
We've gotten a taste, you know, we've been able to tap you for a project here or there, you know, we're excited. Oh, yeah.
I think too, like
we're excited to release
that. We get one member of Group Golf Therapy has pretty much met each one of our guests in person at least once. So, you know,
right.
As long as we get that one piece out there, then the rest will come eventually.
Should we do like a therapy retreat where, you know, all of your clients come and we just have a weekend together?
Cut her mic. She knows too much.
She knows too much.
Oh, no. Everyone's like,
cue the poison dart.
Who told
cue the poison dart.
I love that idea. One through line through a lot of our guests that we've had on, and we've had guests from all walks of life and all walks of, I guess you can say, success or fame. But the one thing that they all seem to mention is at some point in their life, they've fallen in love with the process of doing it versus having these goals that were maybe pie in the sky at one point, and then they achieved them and then they realized that that wasn't necessarily the thing that was going to bring them happiness and joy. They got the joy from doing the work and just falling in love with the process. Has that changed for you over the past few years, or is just doing the work and the process still as rewarding as the end result?
Yeah, I think that's the tricky part about setting very specific goals, is that the journey becomes less important. And I think I've done well in just allowing myself to evolve as opportunities arise or as no's come through, which has made this like really exciting for me, because I am often very surprised when emails come through, and it snowballs. And so I think being in this process, being present, allowing mistakes to happen, allowing successes to sink in and enjoy them, has been such a pleasure. And just kind of allowing that journey to unfold. You know, we have the privilege of like saying, yeah, whatever happens, happens. Like, it's going to be fine. But that's how it feels, because of the people we have around us.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, we can't fail. Like, we're not going to fail. This might not work out. Group golf therapy might not be around forever. That's not a failure. That's an evolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point.
That's also a bar.
That is.
It is a bar. Bar check. I rented a C-class to go up to Innis the other week.
Yeah, you did.
Jeez. Which was really fun.
Hell yeah.
Felt good.
I bet it did. Felt wealthy. You know what else makes me feel wealthy?
What?
A premium leather golf glove.
Fresh Cabretta. I got a new one right here. Look at this.
You got the pack?
Ooh. The pack touchdown.
Ooh. Yes.
What does it smell like? It
smells like a hug.
That sound right there, baby. That's that fresh, brand new Red Rooster glove about to go on the back of your hand. So if that don't make you want to buy a Red Rooster glove, then turn this podcast off right now and don't come back, sir or madam or you person.
Go to redroostergolf.com. Cocka doodle do. Something that stood out to me in the film that you did, Christine, with Charles Schwab, was
Charlotte Schwab.
You did sort of set a goal for yourself, which was to design a modern day St. Andrews.
Yeah.
And that obviously doesn't square exactly with your comment at the top, which was, I don't want to design top 100 golf courses. So if those two things aren't equal, what does the modern day St. Andrews look like to you?
The modern day St. Andrews is a place where the golf course acts as a service to the community. it allows people to use the golf course however they need to, whether that be to walk their dog or have an important conversation with their partner or play golf. It's a space where, you know, ownership belongs to the community, and access is there, and diversity is there, and fun is there, and sustainability is there, and top 100 golf course doesn't matter. It's just the pieces of St. Andrews that I think are really special and worthy of emulation dropped into the middle of Toronto or dropped into the middle of LA or Milwaukee or Boston or whatever, wherever it is. Just like make something that has a really powerful change drive within a space, within somebody's space, within, you know, on an Indigenous reservation in Northern Canada, like whatever, whoever needs this, design something that suits their needs, that is theirs.
That's a, dare I say, a radical thing in capital G golf, you know, have a golf course be accessible and even ownership given to the community.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's so beautiful for me to think about. Like I'm, as you're explaining, as you're detailing, I'm like visualizing it.
Yeah.
Seeing dogs running around in the middle of the fairway. All right, wait till this dog clears, then I'll hit my tee shot. Yeah,
because this golf course belongs to that dog as much as it does to me, and this is a shared space. Yeah.
And if you buy into that, if everyone in that community buys into that, then
yeah, how much impact could that have?
Right, that's like harmonious. That's
yes. That's community.
That's community. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Besides St. Andrews, are there, and maybe St. Andrews actually doesn't even fit into this quasi communal utopian golf course dream that you have, but are there any examples of this that you can see right now that you can point to and be like, that golf course is doing an incredible job. This one is doing an incredible job for the same and more reasons. Like, do you have examples like that you look at?
Yeah, there. I met someone named Tanel Boltz last year, and she's an adaptive needs golfer. And her, along with Ben Warren, who's the architect, have created this 9-hole oasis in Minnesota.
The Loop.
That is designed, it's called Chaska. It's designed for golfers with disabilities. And part of the design process that they went through was inviting members with golfers with disabilities into the design process and saying, like, what's the maximum slope? What's the maximum yardage? How do you hit a bunker shot? How do you putt? And just understanding the logistics of how they use a golf course was then considered into the final design. And they've created this something really beautiful, really collaborative that now the community is, you know, really bought into, been a part of. And it's something that's theirs. So I think that's a really great example.
Are there others like it? Like, cause I've never heard of this course. I got to imagine, you know, maybe folks listening haven't either. Like that's so cool. And like,
yeah.
It didn't get enough press, to be fair.
No.
We're putting them on right now. I just looked at their website. It's called barrierfreegolf.com. That's so sick. Like that's it's like barrier free. Like that's amazing. That's what golf should be. But I love that that's their website.
It's 100%
not. Yeah, it's unfortunately the opposite of that.
Hard not.
Yeah, it's barriers to entry golf.com.
Right.
.com, yeah.
Wow. Well, thanks for putting that one on. We'll definitely put that in the show notes.
I know sustainability is also a big tenet of your design practice. I don't know if there's a better way really to ask this, but does it make sense to make new golf courses at all?
That's a great question. I think it depends on a lot of factors. If we're just creating another golf course for the sake of you know, people playing golf, then in my mind, the land usage, the resource usage, is probably not worth it. But if we're creating a golf course like Chaska, maybe it is worth it.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of factors that go into that, but as a general thought, I think we have to be really careful about that land usage in going forward and that water consumption going forward, to make sure that we create sustainability for the golf courses that we do already have. And there's sustainability in another sense as well, apart from environmental, of sustainability of this entire industry and game of golf, and making sure that we are recruiting and retaining new golfers and the facilities are in place to allow beginners to learn how to play golf. And municipal golf plays a big part of that. It's a huge point of entry for a lot of us. And so really, you know, putting our resources and our time into making sure the golf courses that do already exist are sustainable in that way as well.
We went down to Palm Springs for a quick shoot about a month ago, and we talked a little bit about this when we were on site, but Palm Springs, Palm Desert, that area has obviously become known as a golf mecca in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's something like 200 golf courses in like a 350 square mile radius.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot of land and water that's being used every day in a space that, if you look outside of the boundaries of the golf courses, the natural vegetation, the natural foliage doesn't look like the golf course. It's desert. No,
absolutely not. Yeah, it's sand.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder how we square that, how we raise enough public consciousness around that issue, and what is to be done as an industry to maybe delete some of those golf courses from the earth.
Control all, delete.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be like a bit of natural selection that happens in the next 10, 15, 20 years as the climate continues to evolve and water becomes more expensive or less accessible. It's just not sustainable as it is. So I would encourage those golf courses to start now for planning for that, of seeing how they can reduce their water consumption, seeing how they can set up the golf course to play firm and fast, or to use the golf course in multi-use ways, so that, you know, they have other streams of revenue and are encouraging a more diverse type of person to use the golf course. Mm. Because 300 golf courses in a small space, it's really tough business, let alone in that kind of climate.
I'm kind of curious, from an insider's perspective, what, other than how golf in the UK is just looked at differently, it's more of a community feature, a golf course is a community feature versus a exclusive plot of land for a set number of people. How do you, like, where do you see golf courses being able to have alternate purposes? And what do you think, or where do you think it could be a good opportunity for golf courses to use their property other than just for golf?
Maybe a little spin on that, but I think these kind of like gated off exclusive experiences have a responsibility to give back to their municipal golf courses in whatever way they can, so that this stream of golfers that keeps joining their club is still there, because no one spends $20,000 initiation fee to join a club without learning how to play golf first.
So
I think there's a responsibility there for clubs that are revenue driven to support their non-for-profit municipal clubs, whether that be with like sharing maintenance equipment, sharing knowledge, sharing tea times, sharing access in whatever way that they can. I think that's the responsibility of clubs that are able to do that. In the same way that municipal golf supports like other parts of our towns that don't make money, like like parks, like tennis courts, like golf, municipal golf subsidizes a lot of our community's access points into recreation. And so, you know, it's just, you know, pay it forward, man.
I'm looking forward to like playing a muni with Bel Air Country Club's golf carts. That's what I want. Give me the Tufted leather on these cheeks.
They're having like your municipal golf course having a big tournament. Share your golf carts. Don't make them go rent them. I'm like saying, help them out.
True. I'm saying.
Yeah.
I really liked thinking about the time that you ask for before you head to a project to just explore the course yourself. Like that's cool. To imagine that's invaluable for you.
It is. It really is. Yeah. It's very important.
Not only from like the technical aspects, like you're taking notes on like how this land sets up, what this bunker looks like, but like outside of that, outside of the task at hand, what are you thinking about? What are you dreaming about? Like who, I guess the question is, are you seeing the course through your eyes now, or are you, I guess, dreaming about what could be?
No, I think it's an introduction like it would be for you meeting someone for the first time, of like just really trying to uncover their character and their values and their strengths and their weaknesses and how, what you can offer them. It really is like very intimate for me, of trying to discover like the bones of a place. And that is a lot of the time a feeling or an intuition of like just being alone with that person is really valuable time. So it's a discovery of what the golf course is at that moment.
Is there a golf course that you've spent time alone at that you have learned a particular thing about yourself? Like when you're on a golf course and you're alone, how much self-reflection are you doing as well? And is there any one space in particular, one golf course in particular, maybe where a good deal of that self-reflection has taken place for one reason or another?
I'm not sure. I'll have to tune into that a little bit more in the future, but I usually get that most from like interacting with people. That on my own, I'm not sure I'm very good at that. But I'll think about that next time I'm on a golf course by myself.
One of the questions I know that we ask is, you know, if you could play a round of golf with the younger version of yourself, what would y'all talk about? But what's the legal jargon? I move to,
not I raise. Like emotion?
I motion. Thank you. Motion to take young Christine, who's learning golf through the tutelage of Nan back in Scotland, into that next introduction. That's my motion.
Motion seconded.
I want to know what that version thinks of this golf course. That would be a fun just thought exercise.
Yeah, I don't want to speak on that right now because I'm not sure I can.
Oh, you don't have to.
It's a really beautiful thought.
That was just for you.
I'm gonna keep that.
I want to hit that question though. If you could play a round of golf with a younger version of yourself, Christine, what would the conversation be like, do you think?
I think it would be something along the lines of like, your authenticity is going to be what makes you special. And like really leaning into who you think you are and that exploration of yourself, because it's pretty wonderful.
We think so too.
Yeah. You know, we agree.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I only allow you to make me cry once per podcast.
So. All right, we got it.
Once per podcast 2 years. Over.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like we touched on a lot of some of the meat and potato questions last time, but we also have evolved our questions since last time too.
I want to lead off with like kind of a fun one.
Do it.
So I was just having this conversation yesterday with someone. But what is your golf toxic trait?
Yes, there it is.
Oh, thinking I should be better than I am.
That was
being
easy.
Being like, yeah, always. Yeah. Like I have this shot in the bag and I don't ever. That's toxic, man. That's the financially, emotionally, spiritually toxic.
That's Brad's toxic trait as well.
Yeah.
Well, mine more specifically is every time I step up to a par 3, I think it's a 1. Like this, this is going in.
Yeah, that's extreme. Yeah. But yeah, like,
I can see the flag. It's right there.
It should just go in.
I have those thoughts. Yeah. Well, great expectations.
To be fair, Bradford, whenever we're served up another 25 handicapper on Instagram Reels making a hole in one, it's like, well, I'm better than that guy. Like if they can do it, I can do it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Like we've been golfing longer than they have. They shouldn't be able to make a hole in one before me.
Yeah. It's a personal affront to you.
It really is.
Has your walk-up song changed at all?
What was it before?
Was it
No, I don't know. Don't say it was probably silly.
All right. Well, new walk-up song. What is 2023 Christine's walk-up song? A lot of music's come out in the
so
past 2 years.
So hard for me. No, that's well,
this
so
is also
hard for me.
Cool because we talked about this on the last Shrinks Only pod, like, you know, what we're listening to right now. And music just like, you know, moods change so much. And like right now, like I feel the need to dial it back and go back to my roots and tap in with like gospel music. And that's what's getting me through right now. So maybe in this era of your life, you know, I know you just went to that Taylor Swift concert.
Yes, you did.
So epic. Maybe.
Do not put that in the podcast. I am so embarrassed.
What? How can you be embarrassed about that?
I want to go. I just don't have $3,000.
That's gas.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a proclamation of my love for my partner. So you know what? I am proud of it.
Exactly.
We're proud of you. We're proud of you.
That's huge.
It's, they're never allowed to leave me after that, which was the intention.
Got it.
Just locked in.
So maybe you're in your Eras era. Right
Eras,
I'm in
yeah.
my Eras era. In my Eras era. Okay, we'll put some Taylor on.
All right. Walk up.
I know. I mean, I know all the songs now.
So. I bet.
I'll sing.
Were you impressed by the crowd and the grandeur of the spectacle of a stadium event?
I mean, I felt like I fit in with that crowd. That's all white women, but
it's very safe here.
You know, it's, you know, yeah. Do you feel included in that kind of space? And if you are a white woman, the answer is yes. So it was very inclusive. She's a consummate entertainer. She was brilliant. She sang for over 3 hours straight and
That's
put on
insane.
A hell of a show. So definitely give her credit there. It was pretty spectacular.
That's something that I think going to a stadium concert where there's 72,000 screaming girls, it's got to do something to you.
It might propel you to sing. It might motivate you to sing for 3 hours straight.
Do you ask the smell question?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What's your favorite golf smell?
Favorite golf smell? I think my new favorite golf smell is my old favorite golf smell. It's like, I don't know, I've been going into a lot of maintenance shops lately, working with superintendents, and they all smell the exact same.
Isn't that weird?
Like it's so weird. Like you can be in Scotland, Canada, like America, they all smell the exact same. And it what just is that? Feels so nice. It's like a mixture of like sweat and oil and grease and like man and grass musk and like walls that haven't been cleaned in 35 years and grass like that paint. Hasn't been. Yeah. Yeah.
A hard day's paint. Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's disgusting, but it is like very nostalgic for me.
I like that.
Asbestos.
Lots of asbestos. Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, maintenance shops, like they never get the money to put into the maintenance shops. It's like the last thing that's ever done.
Right.
So
it's like where the stuff goes.
Shout out to superintendents who work in that environment every day. We
even
love you.
Even
we
new golf courses have old maintenance shops. I don't think there's a single. I don't think a new maintenance shop exists.
Mm-mm. They start with the maintenance shop and then build the rest of the clubhouse.
Build the golf course around it.
Yeah.
They like prefab it 30 years before.
That's so funny. The golf course. They age it in oak barrels and then they deliver it.
I will say that from the golf course maintenance sheds that I've been in, that the folks that work there, they take an extreme amount of pride in the maintenance shed. Mm-hmm. And even though it's old and smelly, this is something that I learned when I worked at a golf course. I filled up golf carts when I was 14 years old with gas over the summer. And down in the maintenance shed, the guy that worked there, he always told me, he's like, you got to leave it better than you found it. And that was true of all the equipment inside, you know, the mowers, every tool. It's like, if you took it out, it better be cleaner than you found it. And it was pretty clean when you found it. So, and I think that,
also pretty.
Yeah.
Universal.
I was just saying, I think that's even though it's old, it's the reason that it's still standing is because the people that work there truly care about everything
about it. Absolutely. You're right, Drew. Those, and as you called it, maintenance sheds, like, should not be standing.
No.
They're all condemned.
It's some Davy Jones
shit. Give
more money to
these superintendents to rebuild their maintenance shops, please.
Definitely. That's actually a good segue.
That is a line item.
This, we are very graciously sponsored by Red Rooster. They make our favorite golf gloves, Christine, and we would love to get you one after we hop off the call here. But we have a segment that we call Get a Grip, where we will give you a full uninterrupted minute to rant about anything in the golf world that is grinding your gears at the moment. And we'll give you some time if you need it. But I feel like you have eight things in the clip.
I have a couple, but I get really frustrated when these collaborations that I've been waiting for to come out for months come out and there's no women's gear or no women specific shoe sizes or no women specific polos. Like, I want that too. Hook me up. Like, think about it. Why are you limiting your demographic and your target market to men? Women play golf too.
Get a grip.
It's amazing we still have to have that conversation in 2023.
Isn't it?
Like, I want all of that Todd Snyder stuff. I want it all.
It's the, shoes. I don't understand because
the shoes is tough.
Friend of the show, Shank Haney, Liz Breed, has also had the same talk about, like, hey, I want those FootJoys, but they don't make them in my size in that style. Just make that style in a smaller size. Like, it's not
and
that
like,
hard.
And don't call it unisex. Make a shoe specifically to fit women's feet.
Yes,
just do your work.
Do that.
Do your work.
Do your work.
Make it work. Yeah.
Like, thank
Fuck
you
off.
For that.
Get a grip.
Or don't. Like,
yeah,
bye.
Or don't.
Just,
right.
Or just leave. Fuck off.
Be gone.
Thank you. I feel good.
Good.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you, Red Rooster.
This has sort of been an anti-goal podcast, but maybe we can change the word goal to intention. Mm. What is an intention that you have for the coming year with regards to your mental health, would you say?
That's a really important question. Thank you for asking. I think I want to lean into like a little bit more consistent and constructive mental health journey of like, it's difficult for me because I travel a lot And I use the excuse of travel not to be consistent with my therapy sessions.
Yeah.
And so I'd really like to prioritize that. And my partner has been such a source of inspiration for me over this last year and really advocated for her own mental health and finding what she needs and really pushing for that. And that's been really helpful for our relationship. And I want that. I want to like give back to that as well and contribute to that as well. So
yeah.
I'm going to lean into a little bit more consistency, a little bit more thoughtfulness, and taking accountability for my actions.
Oh, wow. That's a big one.
Good or bad.
That's a chewy one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The travel one is tough.
Can I just retract that? Taking accountability is for my impact rather than my intention.
Right. Can you explain what that means, that distinction means to you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a beautiful little angel. I have great intentions all the time.
Same.
But sometimes the impact of that is like problematic or harmful or hurtful.
Hmm.
And allowing people to tell me that and taking accountability for making them feel that way without having the intention of doing so is something that I can work on.
But I mean so well. You know, like
not good enough.
That's beautiful. Yeah. She's beautiful, just a baby. Beautiful self-awareness.
Yeah, so the self-awareness is key. And like we talked about this recently also, like it really takes some time to hit the pause button. Right. Courage, bravery even to be self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks, honestly.
So, yeah.
At first.
It does. It's trash.
Yeah.
It sucks to look yourself in the mirror and be like, you can do better.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
Because life's already like really hard and busy. And like that takes, as you said, time and intention to give that space to evolve.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes it's easier just to like not face it.
Yes.
It's much easier not to face it.
I prefer not to face it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we know that it's there, but we choose not to address it.
Yeah.
For a plethora of reasons.
Yeah.
Like maybe they'll just forget.
Taking that courage, taking that time to like look it in the eyes.
Yes.
And say, I see you is really, really brave.
It is.
Yeah. It's like when you're sanding something and you have to use multiple levels of like the coarseness to get it to the final product. God, I can't even talk
smoothness.
Today. The smoothness,
multiple levels of grit.
Well, and you know the first course is like really rough, and when you look at it, it still doesn't look good. But the smoother that you get it, then you finally get the polished gem at the end. But that first the first pass with the really rough 60 grit sandpaper doesn't look so good.
Yeah. It's like ew, it looks all chewed up.
Exactly.
I think I'm done now.
Yeah. It's done. We're good.
There can't be much left.
The positive side of that is that it does get easier with practice. Yeah. It's right. You know, it's a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate it. I hate just it so much.
Well, that's a good intention for yourself though, Christine. Thanks for going there.
You're welcome.
We could do this all day, seriously. Yeah.
Should we just keep going? Yeah.
Sure.
I don't want to leave.
I got
what's your overtime?
I am ill, so if I keep leaving, don't worry. But
Connor needs to lie down prone.
He's not dead. Call the police.
Oh.
Yeah.
I still love you, Connor.
He's just folded up in the corner.
Yeah, like he was in Edinburgh.
Yeah,
this is the only way I see you, just like crumpled.
Run it back.
Yeah.
Okay, so can we get something on the calendar for when we get to hang all together?
Yeah.
Please.
Christine, when are you coming back to America again?
I you know, I live like 8 minutes away.
True.
So literally
very true. Very, very close. Very close.
Yeah.
We
gotta go to Detroit.
Yeah, for sure.
What's the Rocket Mortgage?
Yeah, Rocket Mortgage. That's in like September or something?
All right.
No,
July.
Next month. It's next
June.
Month.
June?
Oh.
End of June. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
That's not going to work for anyone. We'll figure it out.
I guess any parting thoughts, Christine? Like, I feel like we should have these sessions monthly, let alone every 2 years.
Mm. I think I want to just say thank you to you three, because you've made the space in the golf industry that wasn't there before for people like me. And I value you and your time and your thoughts and your minds very, very much. And I'm so grateful for you. And I look up to you all in very high regard, and I love you.
Now we're crying. Love you too. Now everyone's crying.
Everyone's
Connor
crying.
Might be vomiting, but Connor's, he's also crying.
Yeah, crying, vomiting, screaming.
Screaming, crying.
Yeah, out. And I look forward to those big hugs.
Oh, they're
huge
coming.
Hugs, the biggest.
Yeah, they're ready.
Got three, locked in. Got three good bone-crushing huggers here.
I can take it.
Did you know? I don't know that I've ever mentioned this on the podcast. So, you know, like senior class superlatives in high school? Like mm-hmm. most likely to whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I got voted best hugger or most huggable.
Wait, those are two different things.
That tracks.
Is that
yeah.
funny?
Most yeah, but best hugger and
was,
most huggable.
I think it was most huggable.
I feel like those could be two most different huggable. Things.
You're right. I think yeah. it was right. most huggable.
Most huggable. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do
yeah,
give
would,
really good hugs.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd second that.
I love hugs. Love me some hugs.
Connor's
me
on. Too. He's a top. He's in the top three, I think, of huggers.
He's a top boy.
Connor's a top. Pause.
All right. End the podcast. Love you, Christine. Thank you for the time.